We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Going on, Knicks fans? How you doing? This is Jeremy Cohen here, bringing you a special new series for Knicks Film School. It's all about salary cap. It's all about trades. It's all about the offseason, really. Although the draft stuff is not my forte, and I am very comfortable admitting that. So, here it is. Cap rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bills, y'all. Gotta throw up the W in that sense. So really excited to be doing this. You know, I wanted to find a way to connect with people on this. You know, Twitter's sometimes not the best forum to be able to do it because there's so many thoughts and how you get it through tweets, and it's tough, right? It's really challenging. I know that I've thrown a lot at folks, and I've really enjoyed the cap or no cap. I imagine you have too, if you are here for this. And if so, thank you. Really appreciate it. But as a result, I figured what better way for us to interact than through YouTube. Q&A style. Put forth what you want. We go from there and we just have a blast. So basically, we're still... I pulled a John by having the sound on my thing coming through. So you're not alone, John. We're here together. But I figure we can kind of keep this style a little loose since we're just starting with this series and figuring out what we want to go about it. But essentially, as the questions kind of roll through, I'll just sort of go about what I'm doing, and we'll see from there. So, you know, I mean, in terms of, I guess one thing we could start with, and it's probably like the thing of the day, and maybe people will ask about this, I very easily could, but there was, of course, it's a mock trade, right? It was a mock trade that came out, and it was all about the Knicks, the Lakers and the Bulls. You've probably seen it. It was with the with Keyshawn Johnson and his show on ESPN, whose name I am conveniently forgetting at the moment, but I'm sure that our good friend and producer, Andrew Claudio, if he has a moment to remind me what the name of the show is, more than happy to say it. But as a result, basically this show had a prompt, which was if you, like, who would say no kind of thing. It's Zach LaVine to the Lakers, the Bulls receiving Julius Randle and Evan Fournier, and the Knicks receiving Russell Westbrook and two first round picks, the 2027, 2028 first round picks. And then, thank you, Andrew. It is Key, Jay, and Max. That was the show. Thank you very much. So, you know, there's a lot of buzz going around about, like, oh my God, would you do this? Would you not? And that mindset. Yes. So basically it's complicated in the sense of there's kind of a push and pull with all of it. And let's start with the team that would be trading away their player in Zach LaVine. So Zach LaVine is an unrestricted free agent. He can sign anywhere. He can do really anything. And but he's limited, of course, because there's some teams that might not be able to acquire him. So, for example, if you are a team that is above the tax apron, for context, there's a salary cap, and then there's the luxury tax, and then a little bit past the luxury tax is the tax apron. If you get hard capped, you can't pass the tax apron under any circumstance. And one of the ways you get hard capped is through a sign and trade. So the Lakers would obviously have to move salary, and they're not going to move LeBron James. They're not moving Anthony Davis, and they don't really have too many other guys because Kendrick Nunn's going to opt in. It's about $5 million. Talen Horton Tucker's under contract for $10 million. So that's only $15 million. It's not going to get you as far if you needed something to get to Zach LaVine's money, which brings us, of course, to, well, Russell Westbrook. And now Russell Westbrook would be going to the Knicks. And as I was saying, Evan Fournier and Julius Randle would be going to Chicago. And then the two first round picks, it was 2027 and 2028 firsts. Here's the thing that's not really understood. So you kind of have to like sort through it. You can't trade future picks in back-to-back years, right? There's something called the Stepien rule. And that was enacted because the former owner of the Cavs, who his last name was Stepien, basically what happened was he traded so many future picks that the NBA said, hold on a second, you're ruining your franchise. We're going to create a rule and name it after you where you can't trade back-to-back future picks. You can do protections, you can do pick swaps, but the protections still, you're not really going to be able to do back-to-back years. So when it says 27 and 28, then that would imply that the Bulls would have to give up a first-round pick, which if you're Chicago, you're letting Zach LaVine walk because at a certain point, you know, when it is a star-driven league, if a star says, I want to go here and it's realistic, then that's something that can be, you know, can be carried out. Like, could Zach LaVine make the most amount of money in a place like Chicago? 100%. He could also get 5 years. He could get 8% raises. There's a lot that he could do and why he should stay there. You could also look at the team and why the Bulls, maybe they're better days aren't quite as high as others, you know, like what is their ceiling? It's DeMar on a different timeline. It's Vucevic. He's a bit older. They've got talent. Don't get me wrong, but in terms of championship aspirations, I'm just skeptical. And of course their pick situation's very weird because when they traded for Vucevic, they protected the 2023 first round pick. So that carries over. And then to get DeMar DeRozan, they had to deal with the pick protections from the Vucevic trade and protect that pick. So their picks are all out of whack. So even then, I mean, like if they even have access to the 2028 first round pick, which I would have to double check, but even still, they do have a Portland first rounder that they acquired. So like they could do something. This is a long-winded way of saying like the pick situation is so bizarre with these teams that it just, this deal already feels kind of dead on arrival, but I digress. Let's assume that for whatever reason, Chicago does decide to trade LaVine away and trade a first round pick to absorb Julius Randle, who I know most Knicks fans have kind of just wanted to wipe their hands clean of him, and Evan Fournier, who is, if you move him, you know, I mean, he could go in another deal for sure. But to me, the bigger reason for why you would be moving Evan Fournier is to clear up room for Quentin Grimes. If you're drafting a player who's maybe more of a 2-3, if they could fit in there. I don't know what the role of Alec Burks is going to be moving forward, but he's a cheaper alternative. Is that something that's of interest to the Knicks? Not sure. You know, Alec Burks does a little bit more creation. He's not quite the catch and shoot guy that Evan Fournier has become in this role. So if you're the Knicks and you're getting Russell Westbrook in return, and I understand the contractual idea where it's like, okay, you get rid of Randle, right? And you get the picks. And like I'm saying, I don't see how the picks are even really a possibility. Like it's the type of deal where even if you throw away the length of Randle's contract and the length of Russell Westbrook's contract, they're just like, why you would necessarily do that if you're Chicago is beyond me. But let's say they did, whatever. So you're the Knicks and you've cleared presumably 2023 cap space, right? Because that's the whole idea for Russell Westbrook. You get him in here and you worry about later because now you have money to spend and it's great and you can focus on that. But I guess here's the thing, if you're the Knicks, I understand and I hope that a deal can be made where the Knicks find a new home for Julius Randle because of the presence of Obi Toppin, because of how last year went. There, we've reached a point of no return, and I just don't see how this gets sorted out. I just don't. And yet at the same time, the front office has long-term plans, or at least we certainly hope so. And based on how they're structuring these contracts and how they're building through the draft, that would imply that there is something in mind. It's not this small short-term fix that we've seen in so many different ways. So the problem is that you're pretty much swapping out one player who was incredibly high usage, shooting inefficiency, and sometimes made just very questionable basketball decisions, especially with his shot diet. He would be taking shots that maybe aren't the best for him, but it doesn't matter because he went to a level of stardom the previous year, and it's hard to reel someone in from that, right? Like the genie is out of the bottle. So you can't put the genie back into the bottle in this case, and he's going to see himself as his highest point because why shouldn't he? If he reached that level, why would he not be that player? And so you're taking that player and you're basically swapping him with something similar, but much more in guard form, who's older, I was looking at his usage rate and the way it works for Russ. Last year, he had the 78th percentile usage rate among guards. That was by far the lowest of his career. Other than that, it has consistently been 98th percentile, 100th percentile. And we were talking about someone who constantly needs the ball in his hands. And to me, it's almost like, just purely from a playing standpoint, swapping deck chairs on the Titanic. Because the difference here is, yeah, you clear up space for Obi Toppin, but we all know that we're going to say, well, what about Emmanuel Quickley? What about Deuce McBride? Like, you've Derrick Rose here. Now, how are you going to figure out getting rid of Kemba Walker? You know, are there other players that are going in this deal? Because as things would stand, you would have Kemba, you'd have Russ, you'd have Rose, you'd have McBride, and of course, you'd have Quickley. And that's, you know, like you can run two point guard sets, but what we just saw with Julius Randle, are we going to expect Russell Westbrook to be a different player as he enters his early 30s? Especially considering the fact that you don't really think he's going to change. And now he's entering a contract year. He's been traded for three different teams. He's been traded to three teams in 3 years. This, of course, would be the fourth. That's a lot. That's a lot to change up. And then when you consider the fact that the Knicks were a slow team, sure, some of it was by Randle, but a lot of it was also by design. There was more of a focus on collecting rebounds and maybe not pushing the pace as much. And it's great, you know, because you could say, well, if you did get rid of Randle, you'd have Russ and you'd have Obi, the fast break would be fantastic. And it would, but it would just be the Knicks deviating from what they seem to feel comfortable with under Tom Thibodeau. But then you get to the shooting factor and spacing the floor, right? Like, we've seen defenses just completely ignore Russ. He's not a pull-up threat. And we know that the Knicks like pull-up threats. He drives relentlessly. That is something that the Knicks would want. But he's, and you know, historically, he's been a pretty good finisher at the rim. Will he continue with that? You would hope so. But at the same time, if teams know he's going to consistently be going downhill, you can plan for that pretty easily. And so my concern is it's then like, well, sure, you have another ball handler around RJ Barrett, but is the ball in RJ's hands anymore? And I think that's the one thing where it was so disappointing with Randle, because I know that the Knicks expected his shooting to drop because it was completely different from what we had seen before. But it's not like it was to such a degree that it was like, okay, we're expecting him to crater, right? Because this past season wasn't just regressing to the mean. It was regressing further than that. And that was obviously a problem. And it was a problem for Randle. And it was a problem for the fans. And we know how the rest unfolded. So that's just from a playing standpoint, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, the idea of Randle for, you know, 3 years, if not four, if he took that player option, how that affects him versus Russ, and you get his money off the books. And then the idea of cap space. And I think one of the things I was really trying to illustrate with the superstar versus star cap or no cap was, number one, the market is pretty dry. Number two, if it does pick up, you do need to trade for these players, right? Like, I don't see a superstar realistically being a free agent for a bit. And that's fine because the Knicks are still on their timeline, right? Like, I know we as Knicks fans are desperate for a contender, but in the grand scheme of things, this front office stepped in and they've had two seasons. So it's natural that they haven't pushed their chips to the middle and gotten someone. And when you look at the players who are likely or unlikely available, it makes even more sense. But anything can happen, right? It's the NBA. There's precedent, but then precedents can oftentimes be completely broken and you have a different situation. So in terms of the 2023 factor, right? I know the conception is like, well, or the misconception, I guess you could say, is Russell Westbrook's free agent and you could non-guarantee Nerlens Noel and Kemba Walker's money is expiring and you could non-guarantee the team options or decline the team options of Alec Burks and Derrick Rose. And yeah, you could open cap space that way, 100%. But then you go to like, well, who's available? What players are really there? And so I think the one thing to keep in mind is that what we saw this past offseason was surprising and not, right? This was not supposed to be a good free agent class to begin with. But the thing is that, well, it got even worse because we saw the players that were supposed to be headlined in this class accept extensions. Again, we can talk about him as not a great player right now, but Julius Randle was coming off of a second team All-NBA selection, most improved player, all-star. It made sense why you would want to retain that player. It hasn't worked out. Hindsight's 2020, but like that was the mindset. The Celtics locked up Marcus Smart. The Hornets locked up Terry Rozier. Aaron Gordon signed a 4-year contract. Like there were players who would have been considered the best on the market. And they're really just, I don't want to be disrespectful to Marcus Smart, one defensive player of the year or exceptional player, especially on the defensive end though. And he's grown nicely, but he could have certainly gotten more. And by paying now, it eliminated the risk for Smart, eliminated the risk for the Celtics in the sense of how much money this player could make. But so it's concerning because who's to say that doesn't happen again this year? If we talk about restricted free agents, right? Because when you think of 2023, you think of the 2019 class, RJ Barrett's class, and how you could do something there. Well, here's the thing, right? The Zion factor is going to be fascinating. David Griffin said it's going to be a challenge. That would imply it's not just a blank check and we'll give you a 5-year max. There's probably going to be some injury protections there. I'm curious how Zion responds to that. Ja Morant's not going anywhere. You know, like if you look at the list of guys with upside that are poachable, there really aren't a lot. Kind of have to trade for them, similar to what the Knicks did with Cam Reddish. And the thing about it is, if you create cap space, it's not as easy as like, oh, we'll just give them a huge contract and their teams will match. Like, yeah, you could do that. But we've also seen similar situations with like Tim Hardaway Jr. We know how that turned out. And the problem with restricted free agency is it's a game where if you're worth the money, the team's going to probably pay you beforehand or they'll match you if you decide to go anywhere. But if you're not, then you have to pay more than that team is comfortable giving up, and you're already overplaying your hand, so to speak. And it's not like, even if you did give a max contract to a player like Zion, it's not like the Pelicans would be like, cool, all right. Well, Zion, it was fun having you here for 4 years. I know you missed one of them. That's not going to be the case. They would never do that. And if you sign, if a player like Zion signed an offer sheet, you can't work out a sign and trade from there. It would either be the Pelicans match and retain him, and then they can flip him at a later date when the restriction expires, or they let him walk. They're not letting him walk. It's not happening. So if we throw the restricted free agents out the window for the moment, you then go to the unrestricted free agents. And I'm just going to run down the list of names. We did this for an exercise beforehand with Julius Randle, but just for the sake of keeping it in context. LeBron, no. James Harden, no. John Wall, no. Russ, again, no, and this is the situation. Beal, if he's even a free agent. Kyrie Irving, that situation is okay. Kevin Love, he'll be turning 35. Okay, are you going after Andrew Wiggins? Why is he coming to New York, especially if RJ Barrett's there? Wouldn't Golden State just retain him? They clearly don't care about spending money. They've been spending a lot of it, and they've been fielding a pretty damn good team too, so they might as well just keep doing that and pay Andrew Wiggins to stay, because how are they going to replace him unless it's Moses Moody? And they could, but that's also down the line, and you could then use Andrew Wiggins as continuous soup if you're Golden State. Nikola Jokic, not going anywhere. D'Lo, maybe. But the thing about D'Lo is he's not a point guard. He's very much a combo guard who does not get to the rim, so to speak. So yeah, you could sign him into the shooting guard role, but as a lot of Knicks fans would like to think, like, well, how does that block our players? What does that do for us? Is D'Lo the type of player you want to build with? He's good. He's talented. I don't know if he fits what the Knicks are looking for. He's not a driver. It's just not really who he is. But let's keep going. Al Horford will be 37. He's been great this season. I was clearly wrong about him, but he's been fantastic. He's not going to be an option, at least not to spend big money. Vucevic, no, the Knicks just have not liked that type of center. Harrison Barnes, okay, well, is he blocking RJ or is he blocking Obi? That's the mindset that I guess we're going to go into, right? Gallinari, if he's not a free agent next year, this upcoming year, because Atlanta's turned down or non-guaranteed his salary, he might not even be on the market. Jeremy Grant, here we go. Like, Jeremy Grant could get an extension for, I believe, 4 years and like $112 million. If the team that trades for him offers him that, do you think he'll say no? And if you're the team that's acquiring him, why wouldn't you try to extend him? Because why would you risk losing him? So similar with Miles Turner, if he stays, why wouldn't he just extend? If he's traded, why wouldn't a team want to keep him on the books and completely take away free agency period? And, you know, like, you keep going down this list and it's just like, it's players where how many of them want to leave where they're at? How many of them are going to want to come to New York? How many fit with what New York's doing? And I think that's the big thing here, where it's like, if you have Julius Randle and you have Evan Fournier, I'm not saying keep them. If you don't want to keep them, don't keep them. But you got to find trades for them. And I just feel like it's very short-sighted to be like, well, let's move them out for cap space we have to figure out the cap holds for the other players. And you have to take into consideration the possibility of Mitchell Robinson getting paid, of the first round pick the Knicks have this year, of the two first round picks the Knicks have next year. And I think it's just like, you look at the first round picks and you think, oh my God, like, why would you not say yes to that? And it's because, well, I don't think they're even going to be on the table. And if they are on the table, then like, it's still, the pressure is on you to probably flip Russell Westbrook. And I still maintain that the Knicks should be an above the cap team moving forward. I can understand this year if they want to go under the cap because of Jalen Brunson, things happen. They clearly were looking to get money away from them this past deadline when they had the Lakers and Raptors deal that was on the table. But it's just the sort of thing where, again, I don't even see why this deal materializes. And I know I've just spent however long talking about a deal that's not materialized, but that's the sort of thing where it doesn't make sense on the court or off the court or from a long-term planning situation. There'd have to be pressure on the Knicks to move off of the Russell Westbrook contract. And I don't even know what team really wants the Russ contract because they're going to want picks attached. And I don't know if the Lakers are going to be willing to give that up. So it's just a long-winded way of saying, I don't see how Russell Westbrook on the Knicks works. I also think that the idea of a buyout for Russ, what incentive does he really have, right? Like, he made it pretty clear beforehand that he's going to opt in, and why should he give up money? And if you're the Knicks, could you give him the John Wall treatment? Sure, you could. But I also don't know how well that would be met. Like, we're then going to see stories about how, look at how the Knicks are treating an MVP player or former MVP. And even when it was with the Lakers, like, it was messy. He's still going to be in the spotlight just based on what the Knicks like, what they do. It doesn't feel like Russ. With the contract situation, it doesn't strike Russ to me. So personally, I'm against the idea. I understand those who are for it and why, but I think all that's wrapped up in a pick situation, that's just not going to go.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Hey guys, quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh offers the flexibility you need with customizable orders every week. You can add extra proteins and sides, change up the serving size when you have guests, or just double up on your favorite recipes so your box works harder for you. You can easily change your delivery days or food preferences or skip a week whenever you need. Feeding the whole family has never been easier with larger box sizes for more servings and more savings. HelloFresh also offers convenient, contact-free delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make, with steps and pictures to guide you along the way. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips, so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less. HelloFresh is 30% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store. Plus, you skip the checkout lines. Try our quick and easy meals, which include 15 to 20 minute dinners, breakfast on the go, and 10 minute lunches in HelloFresh Market. Perfect for your busy schedule. Enjoy restaurant quality meals for less in the comfort of your own home. HelloFresh's gourmet recipes like balsamic fig sirloin are over 72% cheaper than an average restaurant meal. Look, guys, I don't have to tell you how busy I can be with all the work I do for Nick's Film School, as well as my show Final Review. My fiance is just as busy, and when that question comes up every night, what do you want for dinner, rarely do we both have answers. Well, we've actually been customers of HelloFresh for over a year, and we're thrilled when we found out about the sponsorship. Not only is the food delicious, but it's convenient to make and takes away that simple anxiety of what you're going to have for dinner that night. They send you a week's worth of meals, you cook them, you prepare them, you eat them, and then by the weekend, a new box for the following week shows up. It's that simple. Go to HelloFresh.com/FilmSchool16 and use promo code FilmSchool16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh.com/FilmSchool16 and use promo code FilmSchool16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
I know we've got some questions and I'm really excited to get to them. So let's start with, let's see, Junon. Thank you, Junon, for kicking us off. How would a Mark Berman trade hit the cap? Thanks for the content, fellas. Have been sitting by the pool listening all week. That's a great question. Well, I feel like Berman's the type of person where he does a lot of the dirty work, and he's got a, he's like on a very long type of contract. So you try to get through it, but it's more like a, like one of those deals that before the CBA where it was like 6-7 years where it was like, you could do that. I feel like Berman somehow signed a lifetime contract, but you know, that's you got to love Berman sometimes. So here's the, this is a question from RXMCY. How much money is Brunson going to get paid? That's a great question. And the reason it's a great question is because I don't really know. I don't know, but I can tell you this. When you look at, and I don't want to give too much away because I do have a cap or no cap in mind for Brunson. But when you look at previous point guards who are similar to Jalen Brunson, and you take the percentages that they were making, somewhere in the 4 years, $90 million really isn't out of the question. And I think that the factor is, if you're the Knicks, it's like, how much are you willing to give up? How much do you need to give up in order to make the room? Can you get Dallas to play ball? Because they say they're not interested, but if Jalen Brunson turns around and says, I don't really want to be here anymore, I'm going to go to the Knicks, and the Knicks say, we can make this happen without really involving you, Dallas, then Dallas is going to say, okay, hold on. We can't lose Jalen Brunson for nothing. So we're going to try to work something out with you. And from there, it's like, the money can be whatever it is. I know that's a very blanket way of saying it and nondescript, but I don't think he'll get $100 million. But how many
players are there that are really on the market that are even his level because of how bad this free agent class is. And I really like Jalen Brunson. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to slander him here. It's just the market's not great. So what do you do with that? He's going to get paid. Jake Fisher talked about it in an article today, how the Pistons are still really in on Brunson. They have plenty of money to spend. They just want to be good. I don't mean that as a ceiling. I mean, like, they just want to take the next step, which I think the Knicks should also be considering too. But, you know, like, at a certain point, are we haggling over a couple million dollars a year? I don't know. Like, that to me, that seems silly. If you really like the guy and you're the Knicks, just go for it. Get the money. Use it. If you think he can be some sort of answer, and again, we'll get into more of this. But if you think he can help you solve one of your most glaring issues that you've had for such a long time, what's really a couple other million dollars a year? But we'll get more into that soon, I promise you. But thank you for that question. This is from Jason M. Let's talk Colin Sexton. Sure, he's not a pure point guard, but he is as much as a point guard as IQ is, and he fits Tibbs' playing style, a downhill point guard. He does. So I did a cap or no cap on Sexton last year. I don't plan on doing another one, but I walked away feeling comfortable paying what would have been Obi Toppin and the late one of the two first round picks for the Knicks. I'm glad that deal didn't go through. Obi has looked very nice, and the Knicks just didn't necessarily need Colin Sexton. The reason I say that is because Sexton got hurt. Granted, could Sexton have not gotten hurt on the Knicks? Sure. Well, you know, there's some universe in the multiverse where we could talk about that. I like Sexton. I think you could sell me on bringing him in very easily. I just don't think he's attainable. He does go downhill. He's, you know, there are thoughts of maybe he and Garland might not be the best fit going forward. But Sexton's ability to go downhill does matter a lot. And it kind of plays off of Garland, who has more of the like Emmanuel Quickley shot frequency than most. But the thing is, if you're the Cavs, are you letting him go? And why? You can match any offer. And there aren't a lot of teams that have the ability, right? Like, that's where Brunson and Sexton are so different. Sexton is a restricted free agent and Brunson is not. And if you're the Cavs, you look at your finances and you're fine. You're doing okay. The big thing is that Kevin Love's contract comes off the books, but then Darius Garland gets paid. So it's not like they're in this danger zone of finances where they absolutely need to move off of them. And to me, it'd be, first of all, you have to deal with base year compensation if you're the Cavs to trade him. But also just like, you've invested in him. You want to see him succeed. It's also, if you wanted to trade him, the better time wouldn't be now. It'd be later. It'd be, let's sign him to a contract. And then from there, we can trade him if we want to. Because of the restrictions in terms of how everything's moving, it's just easier for them to match any offer that would come their way and then proceed. Granted, if another team like the Pistons came along and gave him an offer that was just disgustingly high, maybe they flinch. But it seems like maybe it's posturing, maybe it's not. But the reports that I have read are that the two sides, Sexton and the Cavs, want to come together on a deal. And the sooner that they would, you know, make it happen, of course, once free agency starts, then the sooner he's off the market. And the sooner he's off the market, the more competitive it is for the players who are still in the market, which is why it's going to be so fascinating to watch Jalen Brunson and the dominoes that occur around him, you know, with Tyus Jones, with Malcolm Brogdon, with any other point guard that might be available. This is from SJNet Kings. Hashtag ask Jeremy, would RJ take a less than max deal? I don't know, man. I mean, perhaps. Here's what I know about the Knicks. They like locking players into deals when they can. The reason that they waited for Rose and for Noel and for Burks is that it made little sense to re-sign them to bigger contracts. Number one, they legally couldn't, right? Like, Burks' max last year with his rights was like $7.2 million. They signed him for what was essentially the mid-level exception. Not the mid-level exception, but that equivalent. But they created more cap space by doing that. Similar with Rose. His cap hold was $9.9 million, and they signed him to a contract starting a little bit above 13. So those are the reasons why, but if the Knicks basically try to say, we're going to go over the cap moving forward, maybe this is, again, this is the 1 year they dip under, then, you know, it's fine. But again, what player are they extending? Because there's no player that they really have from the 2018 draft because they traded Kevin Knox. And they weren't going to extend Kevin Knox anyway. So, you know, they can afford to give him more. They can afford to pay him a max contract. The question is, should they? As I've said, in my heart, which is speaking louder than my head, give him the max. I believe in him. But my head also sees what he needs to improve upon, that he's not a max player, that it is reserved for a player of a different echelon than RJ has been consistently. The last 40, 41 games of his season dating back to New Year's, fantastic. He's shown clear growth. And it's why he might say, I don't want to re-sign right now. I want to take a moment. But it'll also be really fascinating to see if he signs for less and the nature of his contract, because if it is a non-ascending contract, right? Like if the numbers stay stagnant or if they go down in any order, that tells me that the plan that New York has and that RJ is on board with is, let's try to create flexibility later so you can get paid now and we can build a winning team around you. So that's, if anything, the thing I'm kind of like most curious about when it comes to RJ's contract. But no, I mean, he could get the max. I think they're going to be a little bit more frugal. And I can't, not frugal. I think they're going to be a little bit more reserved in terms of not giving him a blank check. And I can't say I blame the Knicks if they go down that path, because, you know, you can't just hand out maxes. You have to see it and believe it. And if you do believe it, then you would hope that carries over. But, you know, I would like to see them agree to a contract. $27 million, $26 million feels like a compromise. Probably evens out to like 115-ish off the top of my head. Maybe 120. But, I, you know, again, it's similar to Jaylen Brown, but it's not, because Jaylen Brown came off the bench and he had a better team around him. That's why he came off the bench. His numbers were a little bit more paltry than RJ's, but those were more of the, you know, like kind of your points per game, your any of those like more basic numbers. The shooting is just not as good, but that's where RJ needs to work on it. If he can finish up finishing at the rim, if he can work on his pull-up game, then you're unlocking an entirely new player. And that is a fully max player, you know, max worthy player without a doubt. So, all right. It seems that we have some more questions in the super chat. So thank you for Andrew for transitioning me over to that. Let's go with Jeremy E. If the Knicks decide to move on from Julius this summer, what type of destination do you think is the most likely, under the cap or over the cap team? This is interesting. I like this question. I like this question because it's, if he goes to an under the cap team, it basically is presented as like, well, what other free agents were better than Julius Randle in the market? And as we've talked about, it's a very weak market. And there are teams that just have money to spend, maybe need a four, like a San Antonio type team, where I don't expect the Knicks to just flat out dump Julius Randle's salary, but I'm sure they could maybe take something back that's less. Because if they are trying to go about clearing cap space, if you cut some of the salary down, right? Like, to make the math work, let's say it was like Randle for McDermott, hypothetically. That trade works because of the fact that the Spurs have the cash to do it. They're getting rid of a player. That can happen. And then if you're the Knicks, you're cutting $10 million in cap space. You probably could have, you could work with more based on other things to do, but you could also clear enough where you then go to Dallas and say, we can do a sign and trade for Brunson. And there's not really a base year compensation issue because we can absorb more money than we could have beforehand. And so that's the appeal of the under the cap. The over the cap for Randall, I feel like, is much more like, okay, we did what we needed to this summer, and one of the more finishing pieces is trading Randall. And I guess I'll go with, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. Because with the over the cap team, at least it's like you can get salaries to match more. You don't have to worry about sign and trades. And there are more of them than there are teams that are under the cap. So I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to say over the cap. I'm going to say it's going to be an over the cap team if he is traded. But it could also be a three-team deal that then involves a team under the cap. So anything's possible. Shout out KG. But I'll go with over the cap and we'll see what happens this summer. From Drew P., how will Collins, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Ayton's contracts affect RJ's contract? And same with RJ being the team's primary defender. I consider RJ above those guys. Well, I guess it all depends on how you use those players. Like, I think Ayton's great. I was surprised the Suns didn't give him a max. I wasn't, because it's Sarver, but I was in the sense of, you just went to the finals. What are you disagreeing with? A few million dollars between, you could just put all of the will they or won't they offer me a deal away from Ayton, but he's clearly done a good job. So from the court of putting it behind him, Jaren Jackson Jr. has clearly struggled in the playoffs for the most part. And it'll be interesting to see how that tracks. And John Collins, I was really surprised that he got 5 years, $125 million. That seems like a lot of money to me, but maybe he's used more as a moving piece for the Hawks. Maybe they trade him this summer. Maybe they keep him. Maybe, you know, they do something for Gobert. I don't know. I guess in terms of with these players, like for Collins, he waited until restricted free agency. Ayton will have the same thing happening. Jaren Jackson Jr. signed for a little under what Randall's going to be getting. It's like 4 years, 102, 106, something along those lines. And for RJ, like, he is a higher usage player than those three. And the role he plays is vastly different in that, you know, he just needs the ball much more than the other players do. And I think that when you have players who need the ball in their hands more, especially on offense, then they do deserve to get paid. But that's the thing, right? Like, I think that RJ, as I'm saying, if he's getting like 26, 27 or whatever million dollars, that's more than pretty much what these other guys got or will be getting. The question then is the percentages. Will Jaren Jackson Jr. get a higher percentage than RJ Barrett will? And with Jaren Jackson Jr., he was hurt. Would he have gotten an even larger contract if not for the injury that kind of sidelined him? Not really sure. But I don't know if I would consider RJ above Ayton just based on how he's used. But at the same time, moving forward, I mean, again, I'm very preferable towards wings. I think you need to have a superstar, star wings around you. That's what I easily see RJ, or at least hope to see RJ becoming. And for the other guys, I think that they are good to very good long-term pieces that you can absolutely use and need. And I think Ayton could easily be a star. It's just a matter of what their role is, how they're used, and the other guys around you. You know, like the Knicks, it seems, and maybe this could change, but it seems like they are comfortable not paying like a lot of money towards centers. And we'll see what happens with Mitchell Robinson. I don't think he'll get anywhere near where Ayton's getting. In fact, I know he won't get anywhere near where Ayton or Jaren Jackson Jr. or Collins getting. It's just not how he's used. But in terms of RJ, yeah, I mean, if he's going to be used like the way he's been used, then he deserves to make more money than they do, especially as the salary cap increases. See if there are any other questions that we got going on here. Andrew, if there's anything that I am not seeing, please let me know. Check the pin comment. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. This is from Blood of DePanda. Please, Jeremy, talk about the potential of Simons to the Knicks for Randall. I need to at least know the cap will allow. Base year compensation. That's the issue with Simons. And it's hard to do that with Randall. Now, here's the thing. The Blazers could create cap space, right? So they could potentially find a way to make the math work. But if you're the Blazers, do you really want that? Do you really want to trade Simons, a good young piece, for Randall? You know, I understand the idea of it where you want to build around Dame and how are Dame and Simons going to coexist and all that. But I, like, to me, it just feels like looking at a player who is incredibly promising and trying to figure out how to get them in. And we're talking about someone who we hope will be traded, or at least I hope will be traded, it just to make things better for everyone. I don't know how he is or if he will be. It just doesn't seem like something that the Blazers would necessarily want. But in terms of the math involved, yes, if they go under the cap, then there is a way to deal with it. And if there's any issue, you could always loop in a third team. But sure, it is indeed. There is a way to get around the legality of it. Put it that way. Another one from Jason M. Here's a good one. Pretend you are Leon Rose. You decide not to trade Randall because the offers weren't enough. What do you want to tell Randall? I tell him probably, depends. If he wanted to be traded, if he had said, I want to go and we couldn't make it happen, I would say we tried. We're working on it, but it takes two. We need you to cooperate with us. We need you to go back to putting everything out on the floor. Because if your effort was problematic, you wouldn't say that part, obviously. But thinking of like ways that we can get you fully engaged and fully integrated into this system, working with your teammates in a way where your shot selection can maybe be improved. And then what you don't tell him is, well, let's try to figure out how we can get Obi Toppin some more minutes, because maybe we don't have to use Julius Randle as many minutes as he saw. And I think the nice thing about the younger players getting older, specifically in this case, Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quickley, is that as they get older, they're closer to being vets. I mean, you could potentially call them vets now if you wanted to, but as a vet, you gain more trust from Tibbs. And so I'm hopeful that, look, you can't really start two quarterbacks at the same time, but this whole backup quarterback mindset, it at least becomes more fair. And fair is not the best word, because like, what is fair? Based on how we saw the two playing last year and then Obi to finish the season, Obi deserved to be there. And it didn't seem like Randall even wanted to. So if Randall's still here, I'm telling him, let's work together. Let's do something where if you want to be out, because we want to keep you if you're good. We recognize Obi's here, but if you want to be out, then we need you to be in, right? Kind of like that old classic LeBron line that he said to Kevin Love, something along those lines. Otherwise, it's going to be harder to get you to a situation that's more tenable and where you feel you want to be. But hopefully that doesn't have to be the case, because it would mean that the Knicks have moved him and can move on and can have Obi Toppin starting and then can go about their lives with whatever package they have received for Julius Randle and maybe figure out how to clear up the logjam as well. So that would be great. From New Gizzle, what's the best 10-man lineup next year, saying we keep Randle? I guess the thing that I keep going back to is, if Randall stays, does Mitchell Robinson stay? And I don't know. And the reason I say that is, it's not because the Knicks desperately need a floor spacer and someone who shoots threes, and tries to go about it that way. It's more just like Mitch has the power to dictate where he goes as well. Sure, there's some roadblocks in terms of sign and trades, but if he wanted to sign somewhere for a mid-level exception, he can leave. He can just go. So let's say he's retained. Let's say Randall's still here. You obviously can't bring Kemba Walker back. I don't think you can bring Nerlens Noel back either. I think you have to move him. If we're accounting for, you know, a trade of some sort, like you could theoretically do a logjam trade of getting Kemba and Noel and a first for Malcolm Brogdon. Do I want that? No. Do I think the Pacers even want that? No, I don't. But that type of mindset of like how you kind of try to consolidate and bring someone in. You could go the Brunson route, but again, how is Evan Fournier's presence going to affect this? Is Fournier moved out? Are you getting someone else? Like, again, I think consolidating for a player like Gordon Hayward, who is good when he plays and when he doesn't play, which is fairly frequent, you can still get guys to be in there. That's something that can be a factor too. So then you have Derrick Rose. And it's kind of why I beat the drum of I'd like to see Derrick Rose move to a contender, because we're getting to a point where there are so many players on the roster and just not enough minutes. And either the players are too young and still need someone to guide them, or they're old enough and ready for the task, but it's fine and we can get rid of the vets. It kind of feels like mixed messaging, and there needs to be a lane that's selected. So if we're going with the 10, I'm going to say let's ignore the presence of trades, but then how do you not ignore the presence of a trade? I'll say this. Okay. Let's get a new point guard in there using some sort of consolidation, and we'll keep the same starting lineup. And we'll ship out Rose, and we'll promote quickly to the Rose role. And then we have Grimes, and then Cam Reddish, Obi Toppin, and then you bring in Jericho Sims, signing him to a portion of the mid-level exception. But then, of course, it's like, well, what happens to Alec Burks unless we've shipped him out? What about the draft pick? And it's just theoretically drafted a player. And it's why I still think that there is a possibility, and talk more about it when we know what the draft lottery situation's like, but where the Knicks might trade up, where part of their consolidating might also be getting a player with a higher ceiling, specifically in the draft. So that's something to take note. But I guess I'll go with that. I know I've only named 9 players, and the point guard's a mystery player, but I'm going to leave it as is for right now. Because if I don't, then it'll probably cause chaos no matter what, in terms of like, oh, you hate this person, you love this person. I don't know. There are just so many different ways to go about it with the logjam. We saw the reports. We know that they're gung-ho on Brunson, and I wouldn't be shocked in the slightest if he's a Knick. But also, the Mavs are 2 games away from the Western Conference Finals. Maybe they retain him. Does he want to be there? Detroit's another option, like I was saying, but maybe he doesn't want to be in Detroit. I don't really know. And then it's from Andrew. Yes, please get those likes up if you're watching. Certainly appreciate it. I know that we are also super close to getting 9,000 followers and 9,000 subscribers, excuse me, on YouTube. If you are subscribed, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. If you are not subscribed, subscribe. Just do it. It's a lot of fun. Promise you we can have more content like this. And we just keep going. And I guess this is from Andrew. Another one. Hi, Jeremy. First time, long time. A couple questions. Number one, why do you hate RJ? 2, this is a completely hypothetical, but who says no? Luka and Giannis to New York, Randall and Mitch to Dallas, Fournier and Noel to Milwaukee. Number one, I hate RJ because, well, Canada is just a better place. So it seems, right? You got maple syrup on tap. You got poutine everywhere. I mean, Vancouver's got great food. It's got so many mountains. It seems cool. So I hate RJ because of the fact that he gets to go to Canada and it's totally cool. And yet I just have to like be an American. So that's the first one. The second one, who says no? I mean, I feel like considering how the Knicks have seemed to be very protective of their assets and trying to get as much as they could, they'd probably say no to Luka and Giannis because they'd want to squeeze out another player if they could. So yeah, I think the Knicks say no. I think they really just want to build it the organic way, you know? Homegrown superstars, be the Warriors, be the Spurs. Don't need outside presence. Just do that. That's what works. This is from L. Paul. What is OKC strategy? Can the Knicks deal? It seems that the Thunder are comfortable tanking again. That's what Sam Presti's 2-hour plus conference seemed to indicate. And I mean, I know a lot of people like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He hasn't even started his next contract. And they basically, it seems like they're comfortable tanking one more year and using the picks to do whatever they need to after that. But in terms of this year, they do have cap space going into the draft. They're the only team that has cap space going into the draft. And if the Knicks really wanted to clear cap space ahead of free agency, if they wanted to go after someone like Brunson, they could potentially work with OKC. The question, of course, is what would they be sending? Who would they be giving up? Why are they doing it? All sorts of things. My kind of train of thought is the Clippers just had Robert Covington re-sign. It seems like they want Marcus Morris to be on the trading block. If you're a team like the Thunder, do you say, okay, well, you know, what if we do a three-team deal, right? Where Rose goes to the Clippers because they need a point guard and he works perfectly and they're dealing from a surplus with their forward position. And the Clippers trade a second to New York and they trade a second to the Thunder. And the Thunder hit the salary floor. They're in a use or lose situation because of the SGA contract kicking in. And then they can then turn around and say, who wants Marcus Morris? And then they find a team that wants Marcus Morris and they flip him and get something back that's like matching salary and a couple second round picks. Maybe it's a first round pick, depending on what's going back to them. I don't know. But that is how you would, you know, to steal from Schwinny Poo, weaponizing your cap space, so to speak. That's how they could do it. And if you're the Knicks, you clear the cap space that you need and can proceed from there. So that's very possible there, their strategy involved. And then this will be our last question. Is from Jessica Clarice Elsener. Well, not a question per se, more of a props to you, Jeremy, for having the best take on that horrible suggested Westbrook Levine trade. It was the worst. I hope you do more of these. Well, first of all, thank you very much. I'm flattered. And secondly, yeah, I don't see the Knicks making that trade, and it is probably for the best. I think we can do better. I really do. So on that note, I want to thank all of you so much for listening. Again, the goal is to keep doing this for Wednesdays. I know we're going to have a lot of content moving forward. It's going to be a slow off season. A lot of time in between the Knicks' last game and the draft. Unfortunately, the draft lottery will be here, although I know I'm going to regret saying those words the moment the Knicks somehow just drop out of the lottery altogether. But until Wednesday, got some fun stuff coming up on Sunday. Looking forward to that as well. And excited to keep